Chapter 36. Prax. Prax remembered his first epiphany. Or possibly he thought the one he remembered as his first. In the absence of further evidence, he went with it. He'd been in second form, just 17, and in the middle of a genetic engineering lab. Sitting there among the steel tables and micro-centrifuges, he'd struggled with why exactly his results were so badly off. He'd rechecked his calculations, read through his lab notes. The error was more than sloppy technique could explain, and his technique wasn't even sloppy. And then he'd noticed that one of the reagents was chiral, and he knew what had happened. He hadn't figured anything wrong, but he had assumed that the reagent was taken from a natural source rather than generated de novo. Instead of being uniformly left-handed, it had been a mix of chiralities, half of them inactive. The insight had left him grinning from ear to ear. It had been a failure, but it was a failure he understood, and that made it a victory. The only thing he regretted was that seeing what should have been clear had taken him so long. The 4 days since he had sent the broadcast, he'd hardly slept. Instead, he'd read through the comments and messages pouring in with the donations, responding to a few, asking questions of people all over the system whom he didn't know. The goodwill and generosity pouring out to him was intoxicating. For 2 days, he hadn't slept, borne up on the euphoria of feeling effective. When he had slept, he'd dreamed of finding May. When the answer came, he only wished he'd found it before.
"The time they had, they could have taken her anywhere, Doc," Amos said. "I mean, not to bust your balls or nothing."
"They could," Prax said. "They could take her anywhere as long as they had a supply of her medications. But she's not the limiting factor. The question is, where they were coming from." Prax had called the meeting without a clear idea of where to have it. The crew of the Rossi was small, but Amos's rooms were smaller. He'd considered the galley of the ship, but there were still technicians finishing the repairs, and Prax wanted privacy. In the end, he'd checked the incoming stream of contributions from Holden's broadcast and taken enough to rent a room from a station club. Now they were in a private lounge. Outside the wall screen window, the great construction Waldo shifted by tiny degrees, attitude rockets flaring and going still in patterns as complex as language. Another thing Prax had never thought about before coming here. The station Waldos had to fire attitude rockets to keep their movements from shifting the station they were attached to. Everything, everywhere, a dance of tiny movements and the ripples they made. Inside the room, the music that floated between the wide tables and crash gel chairs was soft and lyrical, the singer's voice deep and soothing.
"From?" Alex said. "I thought they were from Ganymede."
"The lab on Ganymede wasn't equipped to deal with serious research," Prax said. "And they arranged things so that Ganymede would turn into a war zone. That'd be a bad idea if they were doing their primary work in the middle of it. That was a field lab."
"I try not to shit where I eat," Amos said, agreeing.
"You live on a spaceship," Holden said.
"I don't shit in the galley, though."
"Fair point. Anyway," Prax said, "we can safely assume they were working from a better protected base. And that base has to be somewhere in the Jovian system, somewhere nearby."
"You lost me again," Holden said. "Why does it need to be close?"
"Transport time. May can go anywhere if there's a good supply of medications, but she's more robust than the things." Holden raised his hand like a schoolboy asking a question.
"Okay, I could be hearing you wrong, but did you just say that the thing that ripped its way into my ship threw a 500-kilo storage pallet at me and almost chewed a path straight to the reactor core is more delicate than a 4-year-old girl with no immune system?"
Prax nodded. A stab of horror and grief went through him. She wasn't 4 anymore.
May's birthday had been the month before, and he'd missed it. She was 5. But grief and horror were old companions by now. He pushed the thought aside. "I'll be clearer," he said. "May's body isn't fighting its situation. That's her disease, if you think about it. There's a whole array of things that happen in normal bodies that don't happen in hers. Now, you take one of the things, one of the creatures, like the one from the ship?"
"That bastard was pretty active," Amos said.
"No," Prax said. "I mean, yes, but no. I mean active on a biochemical level. If Strickland or Marion or whoever is using the protomolecule to re-engineer a human body, they're taking one complex system and overlaying another one. We know it's unstable."
"Okay," Naomi said.
She was sitting beside Amos and across the table from Holden. "How do we know that?" Prax frowned. When he'd practiced making the presentation, he hadn't expected so many questions. The things he'd thought were obvious from the start hadn't even occurred to the others. This is why he hadn't gone in for teaching. Looking at their faces now, he saw blank confusion. "All right," he said. "Let me take it from the top. There was something on Ganymede that started the war. There was also a secret lab staffed with people who, at the very least, knew about the attack before it happened."
"Check," Alex said.
"Okay," Prax said. "In the lab, we had signs of the protomolecule. A dead boy, and a bunch of people getting ready to leave. And when we got there, we only had to fight halfway in. After that, something else was going ahead of us and killing everyone."
"Hey," Amos said. "You think that was the same fucker that got into the Rossi?"
Prax stopped the word obviously just before it fell from his lips. "Probably," he said instead. "And it seems likely that the original attack involved more like that one."
"So two got loose?" Naomi asked. But he could see that she already sensed the problem with that.
"No, because they knew it was going to happen. One got loose when Amos threw that grenade back at them. One was released intentionally. But that doesn't matter. What matters is that they're using the protomolecule to remake human bodies, and they aren't able to control it with perfect fidelity. The programming they're putting in fails." Prax nodded, as if by doing it he could will them to follow his chain of reasoning. Holden shook his head, paused, and then nodded.
"The bomb," he said.
"The bomb," Prax agreed. "Even when they didn't know that the second thing was going to get loose, they'd outfitted it with a powerful incendiary explosive device."
"Ah," Alex said. "I get it. You figure they knew it was going to go off the rails eventually, so they wired it to blow if it got out of hand."
In the depths of space, a construction welder streaked across the hull of the half-built ship, the light of its flare casting a sudden, sharp light across the pilot's eager face.
"Yes," Prax said.
"But it could also be an ancillary weapon, or a payload that the thing was supposed to deliver. I think it's a failsafe. It probably is, but it could be any number of other things."
"Okay, but it left it behind," Alex said.
"Given time, it ejected the bomb," Prax said. "You see, it chose to reconfigure itself to remove the payload. It didn't place it to destroy the Rossi, even though it could have. It didn't deliver it to a preset target. It just decided to pop it loose."
"And it knew to do that."
"It's smart enough to recognize threat," Prax said. "I don't know the mechanism yet. It could be cognitive or networked or some kind of modified immune response."
"Okay, Prax, so if the protomolecule can eventually get out of whatever constraints they're putting on it and go rogue, where does that get us?"
Naomi asked.
"Square one," Prax thought,
and launched in on the information he'd intended to give them in the first place. "It means that wherever the main lab is, the place they didn't release one of those things on, It has to be close enough to Ganymede to get it there before it slipped its leash. I don't know how long that is, but I'm betting they don't either. So closer is better.
A Jovian moon or a secret station? Holden said.
You can't have a secret station in the Jovian system, Alex said. There's too much traffic. Someone would see something. Shit, it's where most of the extrasolar astronomy was going on until we got out to Uranus. Put something close, the observatories are going to get pissed because it's stinking up their pictures, right?
Naomi tapped her fingers against the tabletop, the sound like the ticking of condensate falling inside sheet metal vents.
Well, the obvious choice is Europa, she said.
It's Io, Prax said, impatience slipping into his voice. I used some of the money to get a tariff search on the kinds of aerolamines and nitroarenes that you use for mutagenetic research. He paused. It's all right I did that, isn't it? Spent the money.
That's what it's there for, Holden said.
Okay, so mutagens that only start functioning after you activate them are very tightly controlled, since you can use them for bioweapons research. But if you're trying to work with that kind of biological cascade and constraint systems, you'd need them. Most of the supplies went to Ganymede, but there was a steady stream to Europa, too. And when I looked at that, I couldn't find a final receiver listed, because they shipped back out of Europa about 2 hours after they landed.
Bound for Io, Holden said.
It didn't list a location, but the shipping containers for them have to follow Earth and Mars safety specifications. Very expensive. And the shipping containers from the Europa shipment were returned to the manufacturer for credit on a transport bound from Io.
Prax took a breath.
It had been like pulling teeth, but he was pretty sure he'd made all the points he needed to for the evidence to be, if not conclusive, at least powerfully suggestive.
So, Amos said, drawing the word out to almost three syllables. The bad guys are probably on Io.
Yes, Prax said.
Well, shit, Doc. Could have just said so.
The thrust gravity was a full G, but without the subtle Coriolis of Tycho Station. Prax sat in his bunk, bent over his hand terminal. There had been times on the journey to Tycho Station when, being half-starved and sick at heart, were the only things that distracted him. Nothing physical had changed. The walls were still narrow and close. The air recycler still clicked and hummed. Only now, rather than feeling isolated, Prax felt he was in the center of a vast network of people, all bent toward the same end that he was.
Mr. Mung, I saw the report on you, and my heart and prayers are with you. I'm sorry I can't send money because I'm on basic, but I have included the report in my church newsletter. I hope you can find your daughter safe and healthy.
Prax had composed a form letter for responding to all the general well-wishers, and he'd considered trying to find a filter that could identify those messages and reply automatically with the canned response. He held off, because he wasn't sure how well he could define the conditions set, and he didn't want anyone to feel that their sentiments were being taken for granted. After all, he had no duties on the Rocinante. I'm writing you because I may have information that will help with the quest to reclaim your daughter. Since I was very young, I have had powerful premonitions in my dreams, and 3 days before I saw James Holden's article about you and your daughter, I saw her in a dream. She was on Luna, in a very small place without light, and she was scared. I tried to comfort her, but I feel sure now that you are meant to find her on Luna, or in a nearby orbit.
Prax didn't respond to everything, of course.
The journey to Io wouldn't take much more time than the one to Tycho had. Probably less, since they were unlikely to have the chaos of a stowaway protomolecule construct blowing out the cargo bay this time. If Prax thought about it too long, it made his palm itch. He knew where she was, or where she had been. Every hour was bringing him closer, and every message flowing into his charitable account gave him a little more power.
Someone else who might know where Carlos Marion was and what he was doing. There were a few he'd set up conversations with, mostly video conversations sent back and forth. He'd spoken with a security broker based out of Ceres Station who'd run some of his tariff searches and seemed like a genuinely nice man. He'd exchanged a few video recordings with a grief counselor on Mars before he started to get an uncomfortable feeling that she was hitting on him. An entire school of children, at least 100 of them, had sent him a recording of them singing a song in mixed Spanish and French in honor of May and her return. Intellectually, he knew that nothing had changed. The chances were still very good that May was dead, or at least that he would never see her again. But to have so many people, and in such a steady stream, telling him that it would be all right, that they hoped it would be all right, that they were pulling for him, made despair less possible. It was probably something like a group reinforcement effect. It was something common to some species of crop plant. An ill or suffering plant could be moved into a community of well members of the species, and, through proximity, improve, even if soil and water were supplied separately. Yes, it was chemically mediated, but humans were social animals, and a woman smiling up from the screen, her eyes seeming to look deeply into your own and saying what you wanted to believe, was almost impossible to wholly disbelieve. It was selfish, and he knew that, but it was also addictive. He'd stopped paying attention to the donations that were coming in once he knew there was enough to fund the ship as far as Io. Holden had given him an expense report and a detailed spreadsheet of costs, but Prax didn't think Holden would cheat him, so he'd barely glanced at anything other than the total at the bottom. Once there was enough money, he'd stopped caring about money. It was the commentary that took his time and attention. He heard Alex and Amos in the galley, their voices calm and conversational. It reminded him of living in the group housing at university. The awareness of other voices, other presences, and the comfort that came from those familiar sounds. It wasn't that different from reading the comment threads. I lost my son 4 years ago, and I still can't imagine what you are going through right now. I wish there was more I could do. He had the list down to only a few dozen. It was mid-afternoon in the arbitrary world of ship time, but he was powerfully sleepy. He debated leaving the remaining messages until after a nap, and decided to read through them without requiring himself to respond to each one. Alex laughed. Amos joined him. Prax opened the fifth message. You are a sick, sick, sick motherfucker. And if I ever see you, I swear to God I will kill you myself. People like you should be raped to death, just so you know what it feels like. Prax tried to catch his breath. The sudden ache in his body was just like the aftermath of being punched in the solar plexus. He deleted the message. Another came in, and then three more, and then a dozen. With a sense of dread, Prax opened one of the new ones. I hope you die. I don't understand, Prax said to the terminal. The vitriol was sudden and constant and utterly inexplicable. At least, it was until he opened one of the messages that had the link to a public news feed. Prax put in a request, and 5 minutes later his screen went blank. The logo of one of the big Earth-based news aggregators glowed briefly in blue, and the title of the feed series, The Raw Feed, appeared. When the logo faded out, Nicola was looking out at him. Prax reached for the controls, part of his mind insisting that he'd somehow slipped into his private messages, even as the rest of him knew better. Nicola licked her lips, looked away, then back at the camera. She looked tired, exhausted. My name's Nicola Molko. I used to be married to Praxidiki Mung, the man who put out a call for help finding our daughter. My daughter, May. A tear dripped down her cheek, and she didn't wipe it away. What I want you to know, what no one knows, is that Praxidiki Mung is a monster of a human being. Ever since I got away from him, I've been trying to get May back. I thought his abuse of me was between us. I didn't think he'd hurt her. But information has come back to me from friends who stayed on Ganymede after I left that...
Nicola, Prax said. Don't. Don't do this.
Praxidiki Mung is a violent and dangerous man, Nicola said. As May's mother, I believe she's been emotionally, physically, and sexually abused by him since I left, and that her alleged disappearance during the troubles on Ganymede are to hide the fact that he's finally killed her. The tears were flowing freely down Nicola's cheeks now, but her voice and eyes were dead as last week's fish.
I don't blame anyone but myself, she said. I should never have left when I couldn't get my little girl away too.